there's an overarching rebel coalition headquarters called the Syrian Opposition Coalition. They have a military branch which is made up of several hundred rebel groups. And when I say hundred, you'll wonder, hey, how do you have a rebel group that's, you know, how do you get 500 or 600 or 1,000 rebel groups? Well, because most people who are fighting in this rebellion are fighting locally. And what they do is they went to the police stations or they went to the military barracks and they captured arms and they defend their immediate villages or a few kilometers around the neighborhoods that they're in. And so the Syrian Joint Military Command is the military arm of the Syrian Opposition Coalition, which brought most of these groups under their aegis. And they coordinate as the principal Syrian military group called the Free Syrian Army. Now, there's another group which operates alongside of them, and these groups are considered moderate, the ones who are generally secular. They want to try to maintain some rights for the minority groups in Syria. But what they're really doing is they're fighting against the Assad regime itself, which is a minority government, which is, you know, has been imposing its will on a majority since 1970. So these groups all occupy that wing. The second branch, I should say, of the moderate groups is called the Syrian Islamic Liberation Group. And they are Saudi, Qatari, and United Arab Emirates-backed organizations, which are the same thing. They're a collection of small groups which they put under the umbrella, but consider themselves more Islamic. But they're moderate Islamic. They are not the radical Islamic. And the smallest group, but one of the most fierce groups, is the Al-Nusra Front. And the Al-Nusra Front is a Salafist, that's the Al-Qaeda's cultish interpretation of Islam. They're a Salafist group, which is principally made up of Syrian Islamic extremists who already had ties to Al-Qaeda during the 10 years that the United States was in Iraq. They were the groups that were providing arms, logistics, with the Assad government's support, to Al-Qaeda in Iraq. So, you know, when a Saudi suicide bomber would fly to Damascus, these people would pick them up and would take them over to the Iraqi border and turn them over to Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now they are operating in Syria with Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Al-Qaeda in Iraq has pretty much abandoned Iraq, came over to the areas of Deir ez-Zor and Aleppo, and have created the Al-Nusra Front. And they have their own terrorist group in there, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and Syria. That's the name of the group. So those are the three wings of the insurgency. There's a fourth wing, which most people don't talk about, which is just men with guns. These are people who are protecting their immediate areas and just don't align themselves with anyone. And so those are the three major principal groups of the Syrian insurgency.
The Assad government and Vladimir Putin have suggested that the rebels are the ones who have used these chemical weapons. Is that a possibility? Do they have chemical weapons, and would they use them against their own people to create sympathy and support in the West?
Well, the problem with that assertion is that Hafez al-Assad and his father of Bashir al-Assad, who was the original dictator of Syria, working with the Russians, developed their chemical weapons capacity long ago, back in the 70s, as a counterbalance to Israel's nuclear capability. And they've had Soman, GB, VX, and Mustard and Fosgene chemical weapons for decades now, helped produced by the Russians and on their own internal capacity. It's the closest hold weapon system they have. It is the only thing that they have that they see as a strategic deterrent against Israel and Saudi Arabia and Jordan and countries that do not like Syria. So these weapons were not dispersed into places where they could easily be accessed. They had, the facilities that were built for them were built by the Soviet Union at the time. They are hardcore weapon storage areas with very heavy security, and they were concentrated in just a couple of places. And they are not in the rebel-held territories. Now, that said, it's possible that, somebody could burn chlorine gas and create a choking gas, or find riot control agents like like, you know, concentrated versions of mace, and use those on the battlefield. They're often used on the battlefield, and they're riot control agents, so they're found in police stations and places like that, and use them tactically, but the rebels do not have the capacity to get their hands on sarin gas, which is a very sophisticated weapon system. Only the Assad government had control of these weapon systems, especially a weapon like sarin. I mean, that is just, it's a nerve agent, and it causes almost instantaneous death in the proper quantity. So these are not the sort of things that a rebel group could get a hold of, could handle properly. And I had some experience in the Libyan Revolution, working with the Libyans, and I can tell you, citizen soldiers just don't have the capacity to handle advanced weapon systems like that without killing themselves. So, you know, so the Assad government used its chemical weapons corps and its chemical weapons missiles and its battery commanders and people who are very familiar with learning how to handle and launch these things without killing themselves.
How confident are you that if an agreement is reached, the UN weapons inspectors would be able to pinpoint all of that chemical weapons stockpile, verify it, make sure 100% that's all of it, and dispose of it?
There is no guarantee of that. I mean, it's the best option that we have right now, short of attacking the country. But there's not going to be any guarantee for that. One of the big problems that we're going to have with this supposed unilateral disarmament by Syria is that they have other states that they could move it to. They could give it to the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, who operate within Syria, and have those flown out to Iran. But it doesn't matter. They're out of Syria. But worse, they could give it to their proxy terrorist group, which is Hezbollah of southern Lebanon. And they're a very, very capable terrorist group. I mean, we used to call them, class one terrorists. They were, you know, a terrorist group that was supported by an intelligence group, Iranian intelligence and Syrian intelligence. Technically, that's de facto the Soviet intelligence at the time. But now they have enough rocket capability to turn any of those weapons, if they get their hands on it, and launch them into Israel. And they're very close to Israel. They've shown capacity to strike Israel at will. And should Assad decide he's going to do a sleight of hand and turn over the bulk of it, but give some to his proxies, well, this could further escalate the war into a regional ground war where we will be involved. And there's just no way to stop what would come should Israel be struck, or Jordan, or Lebanon.